Going to start on the bottom of Mem Amud Beis, and that's three lines up from the top, from the bottom. Omar Rabbi Zera. The Gemara has just concluded a discussion here about the story of Anshei Tveria, and the Gemara came to the conclusion that Chamei Tveria, as far as Bishul is concerned, is only an Issa Drabanan. And the reason for that is because Chamei Tveria are heated up by the sun, and therefore the status is that of Toldas Hachama. Toldas Hachama is only Derabanan. On Rab Zera tells us, Anoch Azise L'Rabbi Abba D'Shot Ba'ambati. Now, we have a prohibition, midrabanan, on Shabbos of swimming. And the reason why the Rabbanan instituted this shvus of not swimming on Shabbos is because they were afraid that you might find yourself in a bit of a dangerous situation and you'll need to create a lifesaver, and therefore we don't allow swimming on Shabbos. Rabbi Zera, and we'll see as we go on to Daf Mem Aleph, another story similar to this one, where Rabbi Zera, as a Talmud of Rabbi Avo, watches Rabbi Avo to learn halachas from him. And in this case, Rabbi Avo was bathing on Shabbos. Now, exactly how he was allowed to bathe on Shabbos, we have to assume one of two things. Either we're talking about cold water, or we're talking about water that was heated up through Chamei Tveria, if you assume that we paskin like the Anshei Tveria. But whatever it is, Lo Yadana, says Reb Zera, I don't know, did he lift up his feet? Meaning, was he floating on the surface? As long as you're standing in water, that's not called swimming. And that certainly doesn't violate the Issa D'Rabbanan of swimming on Shabbos. But if you lift up your feet and you start floating on the surface, that already constitutes swimming. So the Gemara says, Pshita D'Lo Akar. How could he, Rabbi Zera, even have a question about this? For sure he wasn't floating in the water of this bath. The sign we have a brisa that says, Lo yashut adam bebrecha malei amayim. Vafilu omedes bechotzer. That Chachamim prohibited us from swimming in any sort of pool of water, it seems, without qualification, even if it's in a private area. If it's in an open area, then you might have an issue of what's called hotzah, when it goes from a rishus hayochid into a rishus harabim. If, let's say, the water would spill over as he's splashing and taking a swim in a public area, that would come under hotzah. But we're talking in a private area, in his courtyard. And if that be the case, there's no iser hotzah. So why is it also? The answer is it's also because of the special enactment of the Rabbanon. They didn't allow swimming on Shabbos, even in a private pool. And yet, it seems that Rabbi Zera, so to speak, suspected Rabbi Avo of swimming, of lifting his feet up and floating on the top of the water, lokasha. The Gemara says, I'll tell you why Rabbi Zera thought that maybe Rabbi Avo would allow himself this. De lesle gidude. Ha de isle gidude. Ha vaha. There are two different situations. The Rabbanan prohibited swimming in a natural pool. And a natural pool doesn't have some sort of a rim, or shall we call it some sort of a wall that surrounds it, as opposed to a bathtub, which has a wall around it. In the case of a river, for example, or a pool, we're afraid that he might, you know, if there's a dangerous situation, he might be tempted to create some sort of a life-saving device, a buoy. But that's called lesle gidude. However, the case of Rabbi Avo, he was in a tub, isle gidude, so it has a circle around it. And therefore, according to Rabbi Zera's assumption, there would be no prohibition of swimming in a private bathtub. Now Rabbi Zera tells us another story. And here we're on the top of Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. The Omar Rabbi Zera Anocha Zisei L'Rabbi Avo. I saw Rabbi Avo when he went into the river to take a little swim. He niach yodo keneged panav shalmata. So he was naked, and in order to cover his privates, he put his hands down there. V'lo yadana, but I couldn't figure out inaga. Ilo Noga. Did he have some sort of contact with his male organ? So the Gemara says, Pshita Dlo Noga. How could you even entertain that possibility and suspect Rabbi Avo of touching his privates? The sign you have a Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kola Ochez Biama Umashtin Kiilu Mevi Mabul Yolam. Which means that the Dora Mabul was guilty of, amongst other things, of Hashchas HaZera. They destroyed the Zera, the semen, and a person therefore should not be holding on to his organ. He might get stimulated, aroused, and therefore he might emit some Zera. So how could Rabbi Zera even entertained the possibility that Rabbi Avo was holding on to his member? Omar Abaye says, Asa'ua kibosh boleshes. So again, Abaye is going to equate the situation of Rabbi Avo with that of boleshes. So let's leave out the story of Rabbi Avo for a moment, and we'll understand, try to understand what Boleshes is, and then try to understand the equation between Rabbi Avo's case and the case of Boleshes. The principle of Boleshes has to do with what we call Be'isusa, which is a fancy Aramaic word for anxiety. And what it means is that certain halachos will be waived, certain prohibitions will be put aside if a person is in a state of fear, in a state of anxiety. And this we're going to derive from a Mishnah in Masechta Avodah Zarah. And the word boleshes is a reference to soldiers that come into a Jewish town or a Jewish neighborhood. Boleshes, this now we learned in the Mishnah, Boleshes shenichnasol le'ir, this group of soldiers that came into a city, is, we're going to have two different halachic issues. Let's see the first one. Bishas shalom, if it was peacetime, chavios psuchos asuros, stumos mutaros. The question is whether we assume that these non-Jewish soldiers took the pleasure of enjoying the wine in the barrels of a Jewish home. If they did so, that comes under a halacha called Yayin Nesech, one of the main subjects of Masechta Avodah Zarah. Now, we're not allowed to drink the wine. So now we have to look at our barrels. If the barrels are absolutely solidly closed, if you follow me, that it's like the lid is plastered down, so then we could certainly assume that these non-Jewish soldiers did not drink the wine. But if the barrels are easily opened, or maybe they are opened, is then we have to assume that when the soldiers came in, the Hamish Taltu, and they took over, is they may have certainly enjoyed the benefit of the wine. However, B'shas Milchama, the Mishnah says, that if it was a period of anxiety, a period of war, and the soldiers are on duty, and they constantly have to be aware of their defensive position in case the enemy comes, Elu V'elu Mutaros, even the accessible barrels, which are open, are mutar. Why? Obviously, we're assuming that the soldiers in such a case in wartime would not take advantage of those barrels of wine and drink the wine, even though they're accessible, they're open. So the underlying principle here is called Bi'isusa. Alma, we see from this Mishnah, Kevan de Ba'isei, that's the conjugated verb of the noun Ba'isusa, Lo Menasche. Since they are in a state of tension, anxiety, they're worried about the war. You know, this is, there are bullets flying in all directions. This is not the time to drink wine. And therefore, they're not going to go into the Jewish barrels, you know, they go down to the cellar, the wine cellar, and take advantage of the wine. Now we have another halacha called B'Susa, another application of the same principle. Hachinami, here too, with regard to someone in a river is very dangerous. Actually, I remember in my youth, a very close friend of ours lost a brother in a river. They drowned in a river. Rivers are very dangerous, especially whitewater rafting and all that stuff. So anyone who's going into a river is in a state of Be'isusa. He's like the soldiers during wartime. V'kevan de'bois lo asi lihirhure. In other words, we're not afraid of sexual arousal at a time when a person is in a state of anxiety. And therefore, the Gemara says that it's not so simple that we would assume that when Rabbi Avo went down to the river, that he didn't touch his member, his organ, because it could very well be that the normal fear that when you touch your organ it might cause stimulation, that doesn't apply in the case of swimming in a river. Hacha, b'hacha may b'isusa, b'isusa denara. What's the fear over here? Why is he in a state of anxiety? Who's antithetical to this kind of hirur of arousal is because you might, chas v'shalom, drown in a river. That's not a time, you know, to think the lewd thoughts. Now, the Gemara has another issue over here. And this is really interesting. By way of introduction, we know that Rabbi Avo, when he went naked bathing, he was covering his privates. From a halachic perspective, that, forget about touching the organ, just the idea that he's covering his organ, you know, so no one could see it, is really a tension. There's a conflict here between two polar opposites that tug in different directions. On the one hand, obviously, we have modesty. You know, people could see him and he's naked, so he wants to cover his privates. But on the other hand, the Gemara says that a Jewish person should not be embarrassed about his organ, because that's the milah, that's the bris milah. In fact, the Gemara tells us about David HaMelech, that when he was swimming naked, he was in a mikvah, he thought to himself, oh no, I'm naked from any mitzvah. And then he saw his bris milah and he said, no, I'm constantly fulfilling the mitzvah bris milah. Bris milah is an ongoing mitzvah. So the Gemara says the following, Amy, is it really true that Rabbi Avo was covering his privates when he went down to the river? Va'amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Avunam Rav, Kol Aminiach Yadav, Kineged Ponov Shalmata. A person who tries to, let's say he's in a bathhouse or so, and he tries to deliberately cover his privates, Kilu kofer bebriso shel Avraham Avinu. It's like he's embarrassed about the fact that he has a bris milah. On the contrary, a bris milah is a heftah shel mitzvah. I mean, the Gemara even indicates in certain cases that they use the bris milah as for a shvua, to take an oath when you have to hold on to a heftah shel mitzvah. Lo kasha. So the Gemara says that there's a difference between on the way down to the river, on the way up back from the river. Haki nachis, v'haki solik. You're right. On the way down to the river, the public is behind him. There's no issue of modesty, and therefore he should not cover his privates, because why should he be kofir bebriso shel Avraham? B'haki solik on the way up, now he's facing the public, now the element of modesty overpowers the element of kofir bebriso. He's not a kofir bebriso. It's not that he, chas v'sholem, he's embarrassed about a bris milah, well, one of the greatest mitzvahs that we have. But rather, the midah, the attribute of modesty, trumps the bris milah. And I'll prove it to you, the Gemara says. Ki hada Rava, Rava also, Shachi, when he went down to the river, he would bend over in order to be a little bit private about his prides. And that was Rava Shita. And as Rava Shita was that he was very extreme in a sense about his modesty. Again, he wasn't ashamed of his mili. He was just being more modest about it. So he would bend over. But Rabbi Zeira, Zakif. Rabbi Zeira thought that the issue of the bris milah and not being ashamed of the bris milah is even more important than modesty. So he would always stand straight. And the Gemara says that there's a pshara, there's a compromise. And what's the compromise? That's Rabbanan de Bei Rav Ashi. So these were the Talmidim of Rav Ashi. Kikad Nachis, when they went down to the river, Zakfe. Right? Nobody would see them as they, you know, because their back was to the public. And therefore the issue was the bris milah, and therefore Zakfe. Zakfe means they weren't embarrassed about their bris milah. But Kika Salki, but the Talmidim had a minug that when they went up and people could see them, Shachi, then they would bend over. So there are two ways of being modest. One is if you could bend over for someone, I guess, who finds that that's not feasible or it's not comfortable for him, then he's allowed to put his hands and cover the sight of his privates. Now, since the Gemara is talking about Rabbi Zeira and a lot of issues about bathing, so now we're going to talk about Schwitzbads, what we call, I think in English it's called a sauna. And Rabbi Zeira has a story about his relationship with Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Zeira seems to be in this sugya a person who's Meshamesh Talmid HaChavim. You know, until now we had two stories which he was very interested in seeing Rabbi Avo in terms of the way Rabbi Avo would bathe and whether he would float on top of the pool on Shabbos, the way Rabbi Avo would bathe in the river. And now we're going to have a story about Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Zeira was a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda, not only of Rabbi Avo. And Rabbi Zeira avikam ishtameit mid Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Zeira was trying to avoid Rabbi Yehuda. The boy lemesek li'arad Yisrael, because Rabbi Zeira had decided that it was time for him to make aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. So why was he avoiding Rabbi Yehuda? Because Rabbi Yehuda had a different shita. The Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Kola Ola mi Bavel li Eretz Yisrael over Biese. Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that you're not allowed to make aliyah from Bavel. Babel at that time was the center of Torah learning, and although the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael is a great mitzvah, but in Rabbi Yehuda's perspective, it did not trump the mitzvah of remaining in Babel. And this he's going to derive from a pasuk in Sefer Yirmiyah, Shenemar, Bavela Yuvo Veshamayu. Hashem prophesizes to Yirmiyah that the Jewish people would go into Babylonia, and there they should stay. There they shall remain. As if to say, there's a kiyum mitzvah of remaining in Babel. Now again, there are two ways of understanding this, and we'd go through the Mefarshim, we'd see two roads diverged in the yellow wood over here. There's one approach that says, well, Babel was the center of Torah at that time. We were influenced by the greats who were passing on the Torah. In a modern context, we could add another element to the equation, that's Kiruv. Right? So, for example, if you're a Lubavitcher Chassid, then Aliyah is not even on the, is really, unless you could be a Shliach in Eretz Yisrael. Sometimes you get sent to Shlichus in Eretz Yisrael. Plenty of places here in Israel that need Kiruv. But if you're needed in Chutz Laretz, wherever it might be, like they asked the Rebbe, why he never went to Eretz Yisrael. So he gave a mashal that if you have a ship, and the captain of the ship, he's going to be the last one to jump ship, because if there's a dangerous situation, you know, he has to remain. So that's what the Rebbe said, he has to remain behind. So in that Ashkafa, you can understand Rabbi Yehuda. There's another way of understanding Rabbi Yehuda. This is more of a, not a Lubavitcher approach, but a Satmar approach, and that is, and many Mefarshim understood Rabbi Yehuda in that light, that we have to wait till HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes us at the time of the redemption on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. But until the redemption, we don't have a right to take over the land of Israel, settle the land. This is based on a famous Gemara at the end of Ksuvis about the three oaths that they took when they went into exile. One of them was that they lo yala b'choma, they wouldn't take over Eretz Yisrael. In any event, Rabbi Zera had other Rebbeim, and he had a different Shita, but he knew that if he would show up and he would tell Rabbi Yehuda that I'm leaving to Eretz Yisrael, he would run the risk of Rabbi Yehuda being very makpid, maybe putting a whammy on him and saying, I absolutely forbid you to go on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. That's what my father, Zichron Levracha, told me when I got married, and we were thinking of settling in Eretz Yisrael. So I asked my father, should I, you know, I was a little bit wavering back and forth at that time. It was right after I got married, so I asked my father, should I ask Rav Soloveitchik, my Rebbe? He says, no, make your decision, and then go in and get a bracha. It was very, I have a whole story about that. But in any event, so Rav Zera was afraid that if he would ask, if he would tell Rabbi Yehuda that he was planning to pack his bags, Rabbi Yehuda would say that's absolutely forbidden, and then he'd have to listen to Rabbi Yehuda because Rabbi Yehuda was his Rebbe. Omar, but however, before he packed his bags, he said, Ezel v'yeshma minei milsa. Let me go one more time to hear some sort of a wisdom from my Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda. The Isi, and then the Esak. I'll go up to the land of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara tells us the following story. Ozal ashkeche dekoi bei bani. He went to find Rabbi Yehuda, and of all places, Rabbi Yehuda was in a bathhouse. And the whole culture was built around bathhouses. And Rabbi Zera is listening carefully to see what he could learn from Rabbi Yehuda in a bathhouse. Now, this is very precarious, not because of tzniyus or anything like that, but the issue here is Torah in a bathhouse. In fact, the previous Gemara, which we weren't able to do together, that's on Daf Mem, had a whole discussion about Rebbe, who told one of his Talmidim to to heat up oil, but to tol b'klisheni. And the whole Gemara says that don't take water from the bath because the bath was heated up by fire, and therefore you could cook the oil. But take out some of the water from the bath. Anyway, that's called tol b'klisheni. That's a sugya which hopefully you did yesterday. And the Gemara has a whole discussion. How could Rebbe Paskin Shilas in a bathhouse? A bathhouse where people are naked. We don't talk Torah. And maybe Lashon Kodesh, maybe even the Hebrew language, we shouldn't be speaking in a bathhouse. So it's fascinating that Rabbi Zera, when he saw Rabbi Yehuda in a bathhouse, that he would even imagine that he should listen carefully, and maybe he would learn something from Rabbi Yehuda in a bathhouse. Maybe he felt that even in a bathhouse, as the story of Rebbe on the previous Amud, you could learn some Torah in a bathhouse if need be. In any event, Kamar Leila Shame, he overhears Rabbi Yehuda speaking to his, we call it a Heisbacher in Yiddish, a Mesharis. And maybe there are a whole bunch of them there. Haveli Neser Haviuli Masreik. Neser is a kind of a soap so that I can cleanse my body. And Haviuli Masreik, and bring me a comb because I want to comb my hair. And it's interesting that Rabbi Yehuda says this in Lashon Kodesh. He says it in Hebrew. The Gemara is actually quoting verbatim what Rabbi Zera heard coming out of the mouth of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, at this point, Rabbi Yehuda shifts languages. He goes from Lashon Kodesh over to the local vernacular, to Aramaic. And he says, Pischu pumaychu, open your mouths, vafiku havla. Now, when you go to a sauna, the purpose of going to a sauna is to sweat, to get heat out of your body. Now, I can't get into the health issues. I mean, the doc is here with us today. He'll tell us whether he agrees with this in modern medicine. But back in the day, the saunas were a big thing. And the idea was to, that when you sweat and you get rid of the heat, it cleans the body of different kinds of impurities. So this is all a health story now. Then he tells them more than that. The Ashtu Mimaya de Beibani. It's a little tricky here because Beibani, we said the Bani is a bathhouse. Beib means the water. So Beibani here means from the water that was heated up for the purpose of the bathhouse. Drink some of that hot water. If the purpose is to sweat and to get your heat out, then it's not enough to just be in this very hot steam bath, but in addition, you have to drink hot water. So the combination of A plus B, of sweating because of the heat of the bathhouse, of the sauna, together with drinking hot water, that combo will get get all that heat out of your body, and you'll sweat. And Rabbi Zera Omar, he declared, El Molei Lo Bossi El Lishmoa Dover Zedayo. It was worth coming just to hear this little dialogue between Rabbi Yehuda and his attendants. So the Gemara says the following, Bishlema Heviu Neser Heviu Masreik. This is very important. Bring me this kind of a detergent, and bring me a comb. Rabbi Yehuda was teaching us something. What was he teaching us? That Dvarim Shel Chol Mutar Li Omrom B'Lashon Kodesh. That even when you're talking about something secular, namely about how to wash your body and clean your body, even so you're allowed to use Lashon Kodesh. Don't think that Lashon Kodesh, the Hebrew tongue, and here Rabbi Yehuda is sort of talking to the scholars, and he's telling them a new halacha, that when it comes to secular stuff, if it's important, if it's not Dvarim B'Teilim, you should use, leave that for English and Spanish. But if you want to talk about something that's meaningful, it's mundane, but it's matters of health, then use Lashon Kodesh. Now after that, he's already turning to the Amcha. He wants to teach something to every single Jew, and there were Jews there that weren't scholars, they didn't understand Lashon Kodesh, so he shifts over to Aramaic. And he says, Pischu Pumaichu Viafiku Havla. This is also very important, that a person should breathe in the hot air. And that's Kiddush Shmuel. Now, I mean, that's also based on a statement in Chazal and a Chiddush in Halacha as far as health is concerned, and that's Shmuel. Tiomar Shmuel, Havla Mapik Havla. That if you breathe in hot air, the steam of the bathhouse, then you will sweat, and that's good for the body. Ella, but the last thing, Ishtu Maya Debei Bani, drink hot water when you're in the bathhouse. Maimal Yusa, why isn't it enough that he sweats? And the Gemara says, yes, it's not enough that he sweats because of the hot air and the steam in the bathhouse. He has to drink hot water. Disanya. Now we're going to learn a brisa, and the brisa is all about health issues. And the brisa says the following. First of all, when you're eating, it's not enough that you eat solids. It's very, very important to drink liquids. Acha v'lo shasa, if he eats and he doesn't drink, achiloso dam. Dam is a phrase, literally blood, for something that's antithetical to your health. You need the liquids in your body to wash down the solids. Otherwise, it's unhealthy. By the way, just as a footnote, if anybody's interested, there's a Shita Rabbi Elezer Mimetz, one of the Balei HaTosfos. He wrote a book called the Sefer Yireim, that when it says V'achalta, and then it says V'savatu Be'rachta, you're only chayev in Birkas HaMazon if you eat and drink. It's not enough to eat. You could have a whole loaf of bread. You're not chayev midoraisa and birkas hamazon, because achila requires shasiyah as well. I was wondering if that's connected at all to this gemara. Anyway, then he goes on and he says that what are the repercussions of eating without drinking? Zel tchilas chole meayim. It's going to cause all sorts of problems in the gastronomical system. Number two, achal v'lo holach. People eat, and then they sit in their places, they fall asleep, or whatever happens to them. He's got to walk, at least a minimum. He says, arba'am, take a little bit of a walk, let the food settle. And if you don't, lo holach, then achiloso markeves. Somehow the food inside your body will not be digested properly, and therefore it's going to rot. It's going to cause bad breath. Hanitzach l'nekava v'yochal. A person starts eating, makes a bracha, and then midway through the bracha, through the meal, he realizes that he has to go to the bathroom, and he continues eating. That's not healthy. Domel tanur shisiku al gabi efro. Efer, you know, is the ashes. So after you put the logs of wood into the oven and then you heat up the oven, then you're left with ashes. So this guy, Kaviyachal, he uses the old ashes to heat up his tanur. That's not good. Vizel tchilas reach zuma. Reach zuma is the smell of sweat. Rachatz pecham velo shasa mehem. If he goes into a sauna but he doesn't drink hot water, you know, it's just like an oven. It's not enough to put heat on the outside of the oven. We put the coals and the logs inside the oven. Otherwise, it doesn't work. You know, you're not going to get enough heat in the oven. So here too, you know, you want to, on the one end, make your body sweat from the heat on the outside. That's the sauna. And on the other hand, you want to get your body to exude heat from the inside. That's because you drank hot water. And finally, the Braisa concludes by telling us that rochatz bechamin v'lo nishtatef bitzonen, that it's very important after you come out of a hot bath that you immediately take a cold shower. If you don't do so, then domel lebarzel shechnisuli or velochnisulit sonen. And this is going to be a whole discussion in the next Gemara that we're going to have, Mirtz Hashem, that when you heat up a metal utensil, it's very important that after you finish the heating process, that you you dip the utensil to cold water. The cold water after you heat up the utensil is very good, because what happens is the heat tends to soften the metal, and then the utensil is a little bit out of shape, and therefore you have to strengthen the metal by immersing the utensil into cold water after you heated it up. And we'll have a whole gemara about that coming up in a minute. That's called Mitzarev. And it's also Rachatz V'lo Sach. I'm going to go here with the Shita of the Bali Tosfos. There's other Shitas here, but Tosfos Shita is that after you come out of the bathhouse, your skin is a little bit sensitive, and you might get cracks in your skin, and therefore from the hot water, so therefore you should anoint yourself with oil. And if you don't do so, domel amayim al gabi chavis, you know, when you have a barrel, the main thing is that you clean the inside of the barrel. If you just pour water on the outside of the barrel, that doesn't really help anything. So the concept of heating the metal from the outside is like water on the chavis on the outside. That's not good enough. You need to dunk the utensil into cold water so that the cold water will enter into the utensil on the inside. And that's like a case of washing a barrel, and you rinse it off with cold water, not just on the outside, but also on the inside. And now we're ready for the first of two Mishnayos here on Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph.
Just a quick question, please.
Yeah.
What is the connection between all of this last part to the idea of the chavis and the drinking of the Yayin Nesach?
Ah, the chavis has to do with a mashal in which the Brisa wants to emphasize that just like in the physical world, we have situations where if you want to achieve a goal, you have to do not just X but also Y, so too in the biological world, if you want to achieve a certain goal, then you have to do not just X and not just Y. As far as the Bisusa of the soldiers, that was for a different Gemara. That was where Abzera was watching Rabbi Avo, and he was wondering whether Avo made actual contact between his hands and his male organ. And the Gemara says, Mishum Bisusa, there was no problem, there would be no issue. But basically, all that we've done today so far, and already a half hour has gone by, is just to learn about Rabbi Zera and how Rabbi Zera was Meshamish Talmidei Chachamim. He learned from his Rebbeim. The first two stories are all about bathing, because the previous sugya in the Gemara was about bathing on Shabbos. And the last story is about Shvitz buds. That's also connected to the previous Gemara, because the Gemara says that under certain circumstances, you're not allowed to even go into a bathhouse to sweat on Shabbos. That's the sugya Liel on Daf Mem. Now we get back to Kira, in a sense. You know, the different utensils that heat up food, heat up liquids, and what you're allowed to leave on Erev Shabbos and leave it over Shabbos, and it'll be kept warm on Shabbos. So now the Mishnah is going to talk about two different kinds of kelim, of kinds of utensils. One is called a muliar, and the other is called an antichi. So we're going to try to figure out what these utensils are. Right now, we'll just call them by the names that are given by the Mishnah, because the Gemara is going to try to tell us what each one of these utensils is. And muliar, hagaruf, shosim emenu b'shabbos. So, Erev Shabbos, I'm allowed to leave my hot water in a utensil which is called a muliar, but only on one condition, and that is that it's garuf. You may remember the word garuf from the first Mishnah in this perek. And garuf means that we clear out the coals. All this has to be done before Shabbos. Now, we're going to learn this Mishnah and the succeeding Gemara according to Rashi. And there are many other Shitas in Rishonim. But Rashi is going to learn this sugya from the perspective of the fourth perek, which is called Hatmana. And on Erev Shabbos, you're allowed to leave food, and now we're going to talk about liquids, on an open fire, I'm sorry, let me leave out those words on an open fire. You're allowed to leave them in a place where they'll be insulated and their heat will be preserved, as opposed to leaving food or liquid insulated when the insulation is going to increase the level of the heat. So in the case of moliar, since there are coals inside this utensil, if you leave your water on Erev Shabbos inside this moliar, even if the water is completely cooked, we'll discuss what that means, that's prohibited. And Rashi's going to learn, because that's Hatmana B'Dover HaMosif Hevel, because if you have the coals inside the moliar, then the heat is going to get more and more intense. But if you remove the coals, then even though you've insulated your water inside this moliar, that's okay, because it's not Mosif Hevel, you've removed the coals, it's only preserving the heat. However, there's another utensil which is called Antichi, and in the case of Antichi, we're not going to allow you to leave your hot water on Erev Shabbos inside this utensil called an Antichi, Afal Pi Shegrufa, even though you cleared out all the coals, Ein Shosim Imenu, which means that if you left it inside the this Antichi Kli on Erev Shabbos, I couldn't care less whether it's a Garuf or not a Garuf, whether you took out the coals or not, you're not allowed to drink that water. You violated the Iser Shehiya, or more precisely, the Iser of Hatmana. And we're going to see that the Antichi is a kind of a utensil, a magical utensil, that even after you remove the coals, it still generates heat. And it will not only preserve the heat of the liquid that you leave inside this Kli, it will even intensify the heat. So the Gemara says the following, Hechi Dami Muliar HaGaruf. What is this Muliar? That if you take out the coals, then you're allowed to leave your hot water inside this Muliar. Tana, we have a Braisa that says, Mayim Mibifnim Ugecholim Mibachutz. So it means that the Muliar is a vessel that has that has room for coals and has room to place your water. And once you remove the coals, and again I'm going to quote to Rashi here, then this muliar does not have the capacity, it's not as sophisticated as something called an antichi, which we'll learn about now, to increase the heat. The best you'll accomplish after you remove the coals from the muliar is to maintain the same level of heat. And you're allowed to do atmana and put your water inside this muliar, even though the muliar is insulating the water, because that is only going to preserve the heat, but not increase the heat. However, antichi, that's a whole different story. So what is an antichi? And the Gemara has two opinions as to what an antichi is. And we'll try to explain the two opinions. And basically what's common to both opinions is that it's a Dora Mosif Hevel. That means, again, as I said before, the magic of this utensil is that even after you remove the coals, there's some agent here that is increasing the heat. And you're not allowed to leave water, even if it's fully cooked, on Erev Shabbos, in a way that it's being insulated and surrounded, B'davar HaMosif Hevel, that adds the heat. So let's understand two approaches to what an antichi is. One approach is that an antichi is a utensil that has two compartments side by side, which means like vertical, if you follow what I mean, north to south. On one compartment, you have all the fuel and all the coals that are heating up this utensil. On the other side, you put in the food, or in this case, the liquids. There's a wall that separates the coals from the food, from the liquid again. That wall becomes steaming hot, such that even after you remove the coals, because the muliar is a very small, relatively small kind of an oven, you know, like this portable midget oven, and the wall separating these two compartments has become so hot because of the coals, that even after I move the coals, the wall is itself enough to intensify the heat. That's the magic of an antichi. The other opinion, as we'll soon see, is that antichi is not two compartments side by side, but rather two compartments on the bottom of this contraption. The bottom compartment has its own drawer. That's for the coals. Right on top of that compartment is there's a wall, and on top of that wall is where you put the liquids. Now, this understanding of antichi means that what they did was they put the coals in, and they used to keep it hot the entire week. If I can give you, I'm not equating it, don't misunderstand me, but like in contemporary terms, you might have mecham mayim, and you keep it the whole week. Some people keep it the whole week, they don't want to bother heating up water, and you know, putting it into a kettle and so forth. So they keep it heat. That's the unique aspect of antichi, according to the second opinion. Now let's see the two opinions inside. Rava Omar Bei Kire. Bei Kire means that it's a small midget kira. Just like in a kira, what happens is you put the coals on the bottom and you put the food on top, sometimes inside the kira, sometimes on top of the kira. So the coals are on a level on the bottom and the food is on top. And this contraption called an antichi is a small version of a kira, because it's so small. And there's a wall right above the coals, which is now very, very hot. Then even after you pull out the coals, the heat is trapped inside this antichi in such a way that it's mosif hevel. Says Rabba, it continues to heat up the food. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, no. We're talking about a Beit Dudi. Beit Dudi means not that there's a wall between the coals and the food, in which you know you have one wall that's sort of heated up by the coals, and now that wall sort of bounces off the heat to the food. No. What's happening is that what we have is a Beit Dudi. Beit Dudi means that the coals are right below the food. And if they're right below the food, and the Mefarshim point out that this is something that this antiquity used to use 24/7 for the entire week, the wall right above the coals is kept extremely hot. It's a hot metal, such that it heats up the water that sits directly on this, you know, the kettle that sits directly on this wall, and it's mosif hevel. So the Gemara says there's an afkamina between the two shitas. Mandi omer bei dudi, according to Rav Nachman, is kolshkein bei kiri. And mandi omer bei kiri, avol bei dudi lo. Okay, so let's see if we can figure out this Gemara. The Gemara says that when you have a Beit Dudi, which means that the wall that separates the coals and the food is a very small wall, it's very limited, it only stretches from, you know, from let's call it east to west, meaning in the, you know, the width of the Beit Dudi. So that wall has a limited amount of heat that it generates. In the case of a Beit Kirei, the wall goes from the bottom all the way to the top. And even though it's a relatively small kind of a kira, but that wall, because it's much, the surface level of the wall is that much greater, then it intensifies the heat. So therefore, the Gemara says that if the heat in a Beit Dudi, according to Rav Nachman, is enough to be mosif hevel, to intensify the heat of this water, even when you take out the coals, then how much more so a Beit Kirei, which has a larger surface, and the wall goes all the way up from the bottom to the top, that for sure will generate more of the heat. But if you hold like Rabbah, which means that a Beit Kirei is going to keep mosif hevel, then it could be that the antichi of a Beit Dudi of Rav Nachman, that's not mosif hevel. Tanya kavosei de Rav Nachman, we have a brisa to support Rav Nachman. Antichi af al pisha gufa ketuma ein shosimeni mitnei shenechushta mechamemosa. Nechushta means the bottom part, so it means that the heat and the coals are on the bottom; they're underneath the food, not side by side. And that's enough to generate a heat through this wall, if you will, which is the wall that separates the bottom tier, which is the coals, from the top tier, which is the kettle of water, and that will generate enough heat. So Lamaisa, the Gemara seems to conclude, L'chumra, that even Beit Dudi is going to be prohibited under the law of Antichi, and that's Afal Pishu Gorof. Okay. Let's learn the next Mishnah, which is going to occupy our minds for a good amount of time. And HaMecham Shepinohu. You have now a hot kettle full of hot water. So keep in mind now, Rabosai, that there are two elements of heat over here. There's the Mecham, the kettle itself that's made of metal, and it's been heated up, it's burning hot, and also you have the water inside the Mecham. Okay, so what exactly is the word Pino here? Pino means to take out. Pino means either to, you have to write this down, it means either to empty or to relocate. That's going to be a major machlokas here in our sugya. So let's assume for a moment that we're talking about emptying. So we're emptying out the kettle, and now what you have is a burning hot kettle that's empty. Lo yitein litocho tzonen, are you allowed to pour cold water into this burning hot kettle? So the Mishnah says it depends. Bishvil sheichamu, again we have to write this down. Yichamu means that it should reach the boiling point, which is called Yad Soletispo. Now that's not the boiling point, but anyway, it means that it's very, very hot and it's considered halachically boiling. So for example, if he would put a very limited amount of water in a very hot kettle, the metal of which is hot, it's going to heat up the water. It might become very, very hot. That you're not allowed to do. However, I will no senu litocho litocha kos kidei lafshira. The opposite of yechamu, which we'll call heating up, but I mean heating up to a very high degree temperature, is lafshira, is hafshara. Hafshara means just to take out the cold, you know, to nip the cold, make it a little bit warm. So that you're allowed to do. In order to guarantee that you do that, you'd have to add a really large volume of water and just pour in the water in one shot, so that it'll just take out the coldness of the water, but it won't be able to heat up the water. So again, you're allowed to water, you warm up water on Shabbos by pouring a massive amount of cold water in one shot, into a mecham shepino, but you're not allowed to put a minimum amount of water because that might heat up the water. Now keep in mind that the mecham itself, this hot metal kettle is called tolda sa'ur because it was heated up by a fire. So the metal itself of this utensil could create bishul d'oraisa. And in the case of water, is yichamabu. Yichamabu is bishul d'oraisa in water. So you got to be very careful of it. So the Gemara asked, what does the word pino mean? My ka'amar. And here we have two opinions in the Gemara. Amar av adabar masna hachi kamar. What does the word pino mean? Hamechem shepino mimenu mayim chamim. Now notice that Rav Ado Bar Ava is interpreting the Mishnah the way I presented it to you, but he's adding a word to the Mishnah because he adds the words pina mimenu. We don't have the word mimenu. We have pinahu, which would sound like he relocated that kettle, but no, pina mimenu. He took something out of. He emptied the kettle. And once he got rid of the hot water, then we're going to allow him under certain circumstances, we'll soon see, to add cold water into a hot kettle because there's no hot water inside the kettle. Lo yitein mayim l'tocha mayim mu'otim. Don't put in a small quality of water. Kidei sheichamu, for the purpose of heating the water, heating it until it's yad so lettuce bo, it's really cooked. Avol nosein l'socho mayim merubim kidei lafshiron. But what you're allowed to do is pour a lot of water into this hot, hot kettle. And since it's a massive amount of volume of water, it will only take out the cold, the chill. So now the Gemara on Daf, Mem Aleph Amud Beis, asks the following question, V'alo Mitzarev. When you have a heating process of metal, you have a utensil that's made of a metal substance and you heat it up with fire and it becomes very, very hot, then it weakens the utensil. Again, you'll have to Google this. And as a result, what you do is, in order to harden the kli, make sure it remains durable, is you submerge it into cold water. Like, for example, the Gemara Masechta Yoma was worried about the Kohen Gadol, had to do on Yom HaKippur 10 different tefillos. And the water was very cold. So what they did was they heated up a piece of metal and then they threw it into the cold water to warm up the water a little bit. So the Gemara says, how can you do that on Yom Kippur? That's called mitzarif, because you're heating up the metal. Now, heating up metal in order to make it very strong is called makev epatish. It's one of the 39 malachas. So the Gemara says that if you have this hot kettle, you've emptied it of all its contents, and now you pour in cold water, and you're pouring in a massive amount of cold water, that's going to strengthen the steel. That's called makev epatish. How could you allow him to do that? Now keep in mind, this mitzaref is only relevant because he empties the kettle. If the kettle has water in it, all the way up to the top, then it's not going to be mitzarif, but once you empty the water, the contents, then you put it into cold water, that's considered mitzarif. So Gemara answers Rabbi Shimon, the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Dover Shena Miskavin Mutter. Which means two things. Number means, it means he has no interest in being mitzarif. He's just trying to take the chill out of the cold water and warm it up a little bit, but he has no interest in being mitzarif. That's called eino miskavin. And number two, it's not a psik resha, meaning he might achieve tziruf, he might not. I mean, there are many different factors that go into this equation as to whether it'll actually strengthen the kli. So this is all Rav Ada Bar Masna, because he understands that's pina mimenu, that the Mishnah is talking about a discussion where he empties the kettle of its contents. Maskif lo Rabbi Avo, is that what it says in the Mishnah? Midi mecham shepino mimenu mayim ketoni? Does it say in the Mishnah that he emptied it of the water that was inside of it? Micham shepino hu ketonu. Which means that we're not talking about emptying, we're talking about relocating. And lefanos means when you have something here and you want to relocate it there, that's also called pinui. So the word pinui means two different things. But from the fact that the Mishnah omitted the word mimenu, but instead it says pinahu, it means that he relocated this kettle. Elo omar abaye hachi komar hamecham shepino v'yeshbo mayim chamim. He cleared the kettle means that he took it off the fire. Now, when you take a kettle off the fire and it's still hot, it's got boiling hot water in it. So the Mishnah says, now you want to add cold water? It depends. Lo yiten litocho mayim muatim bishvil shicham. If you want to heat up your cold water by pouring into this boiling hot water, that's bishul. Aval no sein lusocho mayim merubim, but if you want to pour a massive amount of cold water, kidei lafshiron, in order to take out the chill of the from the water, is that you're allowed to do. However, mecham shepina mimenu mayim, what the Mishnah wants to imply here, and this would be the understanding of the Mishnah as Rabbi Adavar Ava had understood it, Adavar Masna, is then lo yitein letocho mayim kolika. Don't even dream about pouring any amount of cold water into this mecha, because you never know what might happen as a result of pouring cold water into an empty, boiling hot metal kettle. Mipnei shemitzarif, you might actually harden the steel of the kettle. For Rabbi Yehuda, and this Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar who holds Dovrshenim Eskavein Asur, that if there's a possibility that you might be over Makam Apatish by being Mitzarev, we're not going to allow you to do this. Omar Rav Lo Shanu El Lahafshir Aval Mitzarev Asur Ushmuel Omar Afiu Litzarif Nami Mutter. So now we have Machlokes Shin Rav and Shmuel, which is an identical Machlokes to that of Rav Adavar Ava and Abaye. And the Shita of Rav is the Shita of Abaye, and that means that we have to worry about Mitzarif, and therefore Litzarif Os. Shmuel Omar Afiu Litzarif Nami Mutter. Shmuel is going to reflect the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, that even if, heaven forbid, you might harden the kli by pouring in cold water, that's okay. So Gemara immediately asks Litzarif L'chatchila Mishari. Wait a second. Is Shmuel telling me that you're allowed to harden the kli? I mean, all that Rabbi Shimon said is Dovr Sheinim Eskavein. You know, if you don't have kavana, then okay. But here he's saying litzarif, as if to say he had kavana in order to be mitzarifit. Itmar hachi itmar. You have to reformulate the words of Shmuel. Amar Rav lo shanu el shir lahafshir. Avol shir litzarif asur, which means that you're allowed to add cold water only in a measure, a small amount of water which is going to warm up the water and take out the chill from the water. Avol shir litzarev asur. But if he pours in a measure of a serious volume of cold water, then it'll heat up, it'll harden the kettle, and then you'll violate the iser, or you might violate the iser mitzarev. And Dovr Sheinim Eskavein is Asur. Ushmuel Amar Afilu Shir Litzarev. As long as he's not interested in being Mitzarev, then he's allowed to add enough water that might possibly be Mitzarev. Mutter, and therefore, on the top of Membeis, it's Mutter. And now, tomorrow's Shia, Mirtz Hashem, will be to see if Shmuel actually consistently reflects the Shita Rabbi Shimon. We have other statements of Shmuel that seem to indicate that Shmuel actually is on board with Rabbi Yehuda, but our whole sugya here that allows you to be mitzarev and you can add a whole ton of cold water into the hot kettle and you're taking the risk that it might be mitzarev, is that's mutter, because it's a dovr sheinim eskavein and it's not a psik reisha, And the Gemara now is going to try to prove that Shmuel in fact holds like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Shimon. So we'll stop here on the very top of Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph, and Bli Neder tomorrow we will pick it up on Daf Mem